This is CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor with Patrick Tucker, the technology editor of Defense One. Starlink, you will recall early in the Ukraine conflict, Elon Musk, a very prominent inventor, engineer, scientist, a man who speaks his mind routinely, he is said to be one of the richest men in the solar system, if not the, did contribute Starlink systems in the hundreds or thousands, I forget what the reporting is, to Ukraine to maintain communications in the early days when the communication system of any country would be overwhelmed with an attack. Starlink works very effectively. I'm speaking to you on it right now. Starlink is in the house, but by a wire, it's connected to a dish on the roof, and that dish connects to the satellite swimming overhead. It's that simple. And Starlink worked very well for Ukraine, except the question, Patrick, is, has Mr. Musk decided that Starlink is not appropriate for a battlefield? And you ask the ironical question, does that mean his technology is not appropriate for the DOD?
Right. So on February 9th, SpaceX President Gwynne Shotwell was speaking at an event in Washington, D.C., and was asked about how Ukrainian military units were using Starlink. Importantly, there's a lot of Ukrainian civilians that use Starlink just for regular communication, and that's not a question about whether or not that's appropriate in terms of what SpaceX has said. But Shotwell said that the technology was never meant to be weaponized and that they were going to basically from SpaceX headquarters make determinations about how Ukrainian soldiers were using Starlink for things like commanding drones to take fire on Russian positions. And that was pretty shocking to a lot of folks because that's going to possibly handicap Ukrainian soldiers' ability to do what they need to do, to take back territory, to push Russia forces out of places like Bakhmut, out of places like Zaporizhia, push them further away from where they are right now. So that has had a lot of people incredibly concerned because this is a really pivotal moment in the war where Russia's readying a new mobilization and every inch of ground they already have is just a launching pad to get more ground. So Elon Musk later elaborated a little bit that he wasn't interested in using Starlink to, as he put it, maybe escalate the war into World War III. And the important thing to understand here is that that is not aligned with any of SpaceX's corporate outreach to the Defense Department at all. The United States Defense Department and SpaceX have a long-running, very established relationship, and SpaceX, through Starlink, through their satellite communications service that they have broadened out, also has a relationship with the Defense Department and particularly the U.S. Army. The U.S. Army, in a couple of different iterations of their big Project Convergence experiment, takes place out in Yuma, have used Starlink for precisely what the Ukrainians are doing, basically enabling rapid battlefield reconnaissance and targeting. So, you know, collecting reconnaissance on enemy movements, on enemy objects and positions, making sure to relay that to the appropriate fires, and then using that data to take fires, then to take territory. Exactly how the Ukrainians are using that incredibly effectively. So this statement by both Shotwell and Musk that they don't want to use Starlink for this purpose of quote-unquote weaponization is completely at odds with what they're doing with Starlink for the Defense Department. A lot of people are just very confused. But I tell you, over the last, since I posted this article, over the last couple of days, I've seen people in Ukraine say, actually, soldiers on the front lines, mind you, say, actually, Starlink is still working fine for us. We're not sure what these statements are meant to convey. So, you know, the whole thing could be sort of an elaborate psychological operation, or it could be another of sort of whim that has struck Elon Musk. He's been contradicting himself more and more lately. If you like Elon Musk or you hate Elon Musk, you know, the joke is now just wait 15 minutes and you'll get an entirely new version of that person. So, we're still not sure what the outcome of that is going to be, but, the idea of hampering Starlink, well, first, it's going to push the Ukrainians to adopt new satellite communications, something that they started out on in November when Elon Musk sort of held up the possibility of extending the service for payment. And it's also, I think, going to possibly affect the Defense Department's relationship with SpaceX and Starlink in particular, because, hey, they don't want a corporate partner that's going to be making policy and tactical decisions for them. That's not what the military does.
The balloons dominating the story these last weeks, but I want to look at the balloons from the point of view of something I've only read. Patrick, what I understand is when you find a spy in your organization, you don't arrest him or her. You watch forever because you're learning far more of operations than you ever would in an interrogation chamber with the spy who will eventually be traded. Now, this is romantic, I understand. But I apply it to the balloon because there's this idea that the balloon was an immediate threat. No, it was a sensory, platform, and it was picking up information that, according to your report, and General Van Herk, no better than the satellites that swim overhead that we don't shoot down. Have I said all that correctly?
Right, exactly. So this is something that Van Herk and that the Pentagon has emphasized over and over again over the course of the last week in explaining their decision to not shoot the Chinese balloon down right away. First, it was flying at an altitude that was above commercial aviation, so it didn't pose a risk. And they'd concluded it didn't pose a kinetic risk to, or basically wasn't going to shoot at anything. But one of the things that Van Herk has said is that, you know, since that incident started to now, they have learned just because of their willingness to watch that balloon, to observe it, to see how the Chinese were attempting to operate it. They now know a great deal more about that entire program than they did before. And you just saw over the next couple of days, they were able to interdict several more objects, a total of four by the time you got to Sunday evening, that were in U.S. airspace. So they've adjusted NORAD has adjusted their ability to spot different foreign objects. They're now able to interdict them much better. And also, the world is learning a lot about this Chinese balloon program because of this misadventure. And this is sort of why you see yesterday a very good article in the Washington Post in which some intelligence officials speculated that maybe China actually didn't mean to lose control of this spy balloon in this way. Because they probably lost a lot more than they gained, especially since, you know, the cameras that were on it, the sensory equipment, it's not better than what China already has on satellites. When you have a satellite, you can have much heavier camera equipment on it, much more space between the lenses. That's key because you actually need that distance. It's physics in order to take really good telescopic pictures. The payload that's on this satellite was mostly, solar panels. Right. It did have equipment to detect signals intelligence, which you also have that from space. All of that signals intelligence is encrypted, and the military said they were pretty easily able to stop this thing from collecting information. It's not hard. It's a balloon. So
As Patrick Tucker, Defense One, commenting on killer robots, not yet, autonomous killers, not yet, and balloons, what we learn from a balloon that fell to Earth. Patrick Tucker, Defense One. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.